I'm Marco Werman, and you're with The World. Let's close the show this week with a special visitor from Canada. She's a Twitter powerhouse with nearly 1 million followers. Not bad for a novelist who likes to spin sci-fi dystopic tales. Yep, Margaret Atwood is in the studio with me. Your latest novel is The Heart Goes Last, and we'll talk about the book in a moment. But can I just say that if you type Margaret in on Google, the results that come up are in this order. Margaret Thatcher, Margaret Trudeau, Margaret Atwood. And I just thought that's really interesting company when you consider the different Margarets in the world.
There aren't very many of them. They're getting thinner on the ground, actually.
What does it feel like to be in the company of your countrywoman, Margaret Trudeau, and Margaret Thatcher?
I've actually met both of them. Margaret Thatcher shook my hand and looked me right in the forehead, as was her habit. That was further on in her career. You know, mixed reviews there. Margaret Trudeau is a very nice person and is very thrilled at this moment in time. Happy to be in that company. She's better looking than me, but, you know, you got to deal with that.
Oh, that's all opinion.
Oh, no, it's not, dear. I'm sorry.
So, and then there's the Iron Thumb of Stephen Harper, which was cast off this week by Canadian voters, speaking of politics. Big week in your country. You've been very vocal throughout the campaign. How are you feeling?
I'm feeling like sort of the end of an opera or something when the chorus comes up and goes, hooray, we're free. You know, and of course that will be a temporary euphoria, but right now it feels pretty good because four more years of he who must not be named, and recently he was he who must not be named. People were really scared of him. Mm. Four more years of him and a lot of things would have been flattened to the ground even more than they have been.
So gender identity, you've actually been getting some questions about the way you've characterized men and women, specifically the two main characters in your new novel, The Heart Goes Last. It's a post-apocalyptic tale of a couple.
No? just financial meltdown like the one we just had.
And that wasn't apocalyptic? It seemed pretty apocalyptic.
No.
Okay.
The apocalypse is.
Let's
got,
say
you know,
it's a post financial meltdown of a couple, Stan and Charmaine, who give up their freedom for security in a planned community called Consilience. It's kind of a weird concept. You go to Consilience, you spend a month in a nicely outfitted home, and then the next month you go into a prison and you produce stuff. You become
get to play prisoner. And
yeah.
And in your house, you get to play citizen. So it's sort of like role-playing and time-sharing on an epic scale.
Is this science fiction? Because it actually feels like a twisted version of our current reality.
I would call it a twisted version of our current reality, which is also in itself rather twisted.
Yeah. So what do you see as the parallels and how it's actually not that exaggerated from the present?
Okay, not that exaggerated. Number one, there are a lot of people living in their cars. Housing shortages for all kinds of people, and especially young people, that's with us now. And for-profit prisons are with us now in the United States, where it is unconstitutional to have slavery and forced labor, but not if you're a convicted criminal. So some of that is going on right now.
I mean, Stan and Charmaine are also evicted from their homes.
They are, and they're living in their car at the beginning of the novel, and not only is that unpleasant and cramped, but it's also unsafe because, of course, social safety nets such as police forces have crumbled along with the financial meltdown, and it's of each against all.
Right. Anybody can smash that window and take what they want out of the
car,
or take the car. Right.
Yes.
Or take the car. It's certainly a dystopian view of the present or the near future. And I've noticed a lot of dystopian themes in literature lately, but it's not a new kind of piece of real estate for you, is it?
It comes in waves. On the literary landscape, I would say with the Handmaid's Tale in 1995, nobody was really much doing it at that time. They had in the 30s and 40s. So we had Brave New World and George Orwell. In the 19th century, it was all utopias. Mm. It was all wonderful versions of the future because that's what they believed. They believed that things were going to get better and better. They were very positive. So the dystopia was the present state of affairs. The utopia was in the future. But after the First World War, the Second World War, Stalin, Hitler, Mao, Pol Pot, etc., we have trouble believing in utopias.
Yeah, so what is it about this moment, this early part of the 21st century, that has brought us back into this wave of dystopian literature?
I think it's uncertainty about the future, especially amongst young people. They are writing and reading a lot of fictions like that. Some of them are just beleaguered fantasias, such as The Hunger Games, but others of them are climate-based fictions. People are worried, quite rightly so, about a changing planet and also changing an unstable financial landscape.
The capital in The Hunger Games, where everybody kind of goes, and the people who live there kind of sold their soul to live with these riches. It's kind of the same deal in your novel. I mean, you go to prison, and all you get back is a good set of bath towels and a comfortable home.
You know, when you don't have a good set of bath towels, that can be pretty darn appealing.
But is that all it takes to kind of, you know, secure one's freedom?
I think it takes fear. So when people are really, really scared, they will trade what we fondly think of as civil liberties and freedom. They will trade aspects of that for being told, at least, that they're being protected and that they're safe. And we saw that immediately after 9/11 in this country, and we certainly saw it at the moment when Hitler took power in Germany. It was a financial meltdown moment.
And what's the conversation in Canada like around all of this? I mean, are
it
people...
It is that conversation.
It is.
The government that just got diselected.
Diselected.
What do you think? It's like
deselected.
They just got unfriended.
Let's go with unfriended.
Yeah,
it just got a moment.
Yeah, it had been pushing fear. Under every shrub, there was a terrorist. They made a big issue out of a woman wearing an Islamic face covering,
right?
And they really used that as a wedge issue. You know, all of these face-covered hordes were going to invade, and people didn't ultimately buy that.
Margaret Atwood, I have to tell you that I was at Duke University when The Handmaid's Tale was being shot there, and I had no idea that you had visited the campus when they were shooting the hanging scene.
Exactly.
In front of Duke Chapel. I gather you had some pretty bizarre experiences during this moment.
I've had some pretty bizarre experiences all of my life, but that was one of them, because just as they were hanging this poor handmaid and sort of tugging on her feet and things, the
like
door...
Like executing her, right?
Oh, yeah, they were killing her. And the door of the chapel opened, and out came a wedding rehearsal party. And they were not amused. In fact, they were appalled.
Were you tickled?
Well, I didn't quite note the moment. That's often the case with moments. They happen, and then somebody tells you afterwards what exactly was going on.
Margaret Atwood, author of many, many novels. Her latest is The Heart Goes Last. Thank you very much for coming in.
And thank you.